one of the most critical issues, the Achilles heel to this whole thing, is number one, not only getting appropriate databases that are both proprietary and open databases, but you have to have enough energy to actually power the databases. We're going to hit a critical point in the next few years where the amount of energy necessary to empower the huge databases that we're going to need is going to start to compete with the amount of power it takes to do the rest of the things that we expect in the country, in the world today. That has got to be recognized as a concern.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Join host Sanjay Puri as he explores the dynamic and developing world of artificial intelligence governance. Each episode features deep dives with global leaders at the forefront of regulating AI responsibly, tackling the challenges using AI can bring about head-on and enabling balance without hindering innovation.
Welcome to Regulating AI, the podcast dedicated to bringing diverse global voices to the conversation on fair and equitable AI regulation. I'm your host, Sanjay Puri, and today we have the privilege of speaking with U.S. Senator Mike Rounds from South Dakota. Senator Rounds is a key member of the bipartisan Senate AI Working Group and the co-chair of the Senate AI Caucus. With his extensive experience in state and federal government, including serving as the South Dakota's governor and now as a U.S. senator, he brings a unique perspective to the critical task of shaping AI policy. Senator Rounds, thank you for joining us today to discuss the future of AI regulation in the United States.
Well, thanks for the opportunity, and I hope we talk not just about the opportunities to regulate, but the opportunities to incentivize as well, and what we might be able to expect from the development of AI here in our country.
Absolutely. Senator, we have a global audience, policymakers, think tanks, CEOs of large AI companies, small AI companies, AI enthusiasts. So can you just start by telling our listeners about the genesis of the bipartisan Senate AI Working Group and its primary objectives?
I'd be happy to. First of all, we're doing this on a bipartisan basis in the Senate because all of us recognize that AI is here to stay. It's not going to go away. It's been here for an extended period of time. Used to call it machine learning, and now some folks have figured out that artificial intelligence probably is more captivating. The fact that ChatGPT came out, Sam Altman's crew put that out, and it really woke a lot of people up because it was available for people to play with. And in doing so, it made people start thinking about what the future might look like and how we go about at least letting people know what could be done if we do it correctly and incentivize it and grow it versus what happens if we don't recognize that it's going to be here for a long, long time. So it's a matter not only of identifying what it can do for us, but then trying to allay some of the concerns about what might happen if the right types of a regulatory approach aren't included in the discussion in terms of invasions of privacy, or for that matter, on a more dangerous level even, what happens if it gets into the wrong hands and it's used to create weapons of destruction, of mass destruction, and so forth. So broadly, that's the reason why we started talking about this on a bipartisan basis. Senator Schumer, Senator Heinrich, Senator Young, and myself. And we decided if we can keep this on a bipartisan basis and we work this way through, get as much information as possible, then we also agreed that we would try to keep all of the relevant committees in the Senate looped in, and to bring in as many of the staff members as possible so they had a comfort level in terms of what the possibilities were with AI and just the development of the discussions around AI, the way we communicate about AI in general and so forth. So there was a comfort level among staff in being able to advise individual members about different approaches and concerns that AI would have over the next couple of years.
So that's very helpful, as you emphasize the bipartisan nature of this. Senator, the working group released the roadmap for artificial intelligence policy. What do you see as the most crucial priorities that have been outlined in this document?
First of all, we will try to provide incentives so that AI development occurs in the United States, where a light touch on regulation would provide a couple of different opportunities for development. First, an understanding of what the ground rules are for everybody in terms of how quickly you develop the most powerful tools, and the fact that if you develop a tool, you still have rules and regulations that are in place right now that you still have to adhere to, simply including the ability to do decision-making on a more rapid basis doesn't change the fact that somebody's still going to be held accountable if you do something wrong with it. If you steal something with it, you're still going to be held accountable. At the same time, to protect the intellectual property that is being developed using AI is important. And if we help make sure that our rules that are in place today that have served us so well in Western culture, recognizing copyrights, recognizing patents, recognizing that people can actually own intellectual property. And if you're developing it with artificial intelligence, somebody can still own that. I think that's going to be an important part of making sure that people want to develop here within the United States and comparing with who's going to have the better types of a groundwork, a framework, whether it be Britain, whether it be, you know, the folks in Europe through the European Union, or whether it be elsewhere in the world. UAE most certainly has a real interest. Saudi Arabia has a real interest because of the amount of energy that they're going to have available for the development of data centers and so forth. But the question will be, where will those key developers want to establish the most sophisticated types of AI development? And we wanted this framework to lay out a path forward so that they understood that we took this very seriously. We want them to be successful, but we also want to make sure that everybody knows the basic ground rules. And another item, and I hate to go on, but I got to share, it's really important that we include the expertise of the committee level in all of these, so that if you've got somebody within commerce that has got areas of expertise, that their input is allowed to happen through the committee process, and that we don't simply do a gang of four and put out a huge bill that doesn't have the input. We don't think anything would ever get passed into law if we did that. So this way, each of the committees will have an opportunity, whether you're talking the National Defense Authorization Act through the Armed Services Committee, or whether you're talking the judiciary, talking about intellectual property rights and so forth, all of them will have an opportunity to have their input about modifications to existing rules and regulations.
Well, that's very helpful. Senator, you said light touch on regulation, making sure innovation happens in the U.S., and each committee has an input in the ultimate framing of this legislation. Senator, you serve on the Armed Services Committee and the Select Committee on Intelligence. And so can you discuss the national security implications of AI and how the working group is going to address some of these concerns?
Let me begin by the very basic that we look at in the Armed Services Committee today. You have five different domains in which war is conducted: air, land, and sea, but also space and cyberspace. And with regard to the use of artificial intelligence specifically, in each of those areas, it's being incorporated right now into weapon systems. The Nagorno-Karabakh War, which occurred back in September of 2020, is a good example of even small countries utilizing certain aspects of AI to attack others and to change the face of war on land-based systems. We've also seen that in the defense of our own ships in the Red Sea, where we use very, very high-speed systems to be able to identify incoming vehicles, whether they're attacking shipping in the Red Sea area or attacking our own ships. Artificial intelligence is a part of those systems today. But even more than that, it's going to be used in the future with regard to space-based systems. And right now, the decision-making on a larger scale with regard to how you track incoming missiles that are capable of hypersonic speeds. If you don't use artificial intelligence to be able to do that, you can't keep up with the speed that the weapon systems have. On the other side of it, with regard to biological weapons, or CBRN in particular, but chemical, biological, nuclear weapons, and so forth, artificial intelligence is going to be used in the applications of those and in the defense against them. When we talk about biological weapons, we're talking about the ability for a bad actor using artificial intelligence, if they can gain it, to create plague-type situations that might be used to harm their adversaries. We'll need artificial intelligence to be able to identify as quickly as possible those new biologics and to be able to defend against them using vaccines that are created literally in weeks or in days rather than in months. A good example of that will be what we call MedShield, which is an example of where we want to be able to create vaccines as quickly as possible using artificial intelligence in connection with our biomedical research centers. We want to do that in a fashion, incentivize that development so that when our adversaries, and there will be adversaries that will attempt it, when they do attempt these types of new plague type systems, that we can identify them, find them, and take them out as quickly as possible. Just an example, but that's kind of what we're looking at within the Armed Services Committee. All of the other committees will be looking at it as well. And when we talk about quality of life, it's a different story, but I believe that using AI in the development of new medical systems, new medical developments, we can change the quality of life for a lot of American families, and that can be shared with people around the world.
Well, I think you covered tremendous ground in terms of autonomous weapons, bio use of weapons, et cetera. But you talked about quality of life, Senator. How can we ensure that AI benefits all Americans, including in rural areas? Part of your home state has a large population of rural areas, and tribal policy is also where you have demonstrated significant leadership. How do we make sure that AI impacts, you know, all communities, indigenous communities, et cetera?
Rising tide floats all boats. And let me give you just one example. Using Guide AI, which is another amendment that we're trying to put into the Armed Services Committee this year, it would allow for the development of biological research centers and significant databases that would be created to specifically identify areas in which we can go after different types of cancers, just as an example. I believe that if we incorporate the databases that we have today and get as much information as possible into those databases, train the appropriate databases, and then allow it for research and development, I'm convinced that we can cure the vast amount of cancers that afflict mankind today. And I'll go a step farther. I think it's not just a matter of cancer, but I believe that we can make an impact with regard to Parkinson's and Alzheimer's as well, if we take the time now to invest some money. And granted, anytime we talk about investing money, we're talking about spending money. People will always say, well, is it worth it? When you think about the fact that older Americans today, in many cases, those who are on Medicare, as an example, are afflicted with at least two long-term chronologic diseases. We spend 93% of our money on the two-thirds of Americans that have the long-term chronic diseases. If we can reduce or delay the implementation or the ongoing or the oncoming effects of those chronic diseases, we can not only save money at the federal level, but we can improve the quality of life of Americans. On a personal level, my wife passed away from cancer in November of 21. I saw the development of technologies at that time that helped to continue her life for a period of months. I'm convinced that if we put the right types of investments right now into the application of artificial intelligence to make decisions more rapidly than ever before, and to work our way through with the medical field, we can find the right types of cancer treatments more rapidly than ever before, specifically person by person. And in doing so, we can stop cancer, we can find the cures, and improve the quality of life that will impact every single American family. Think about what that means. So today, that can be not just for Americans, but it can be for people around the world. And when you start to improve the quality of life for people around the world, now you've really impacted and you've confirmed that AI is here to stay. That's what I want to see.
Looking to make the most out of AI advancements and innovation? Visit regulatingai.org to learn more about how best to optimize the use and integration of AI, and sign up for the Regulating AI newsletter to keep up to date with the latest in AI governance and regulation.
Well, that's very powerful, Senator. As you said, you know, finding new cures for diseases like cancer. Do you think also maybe approvals of drugs could become faster using AI, Senator?
There is no question about it. And look, we have to modernize the way that we do drug approval. We can learn from some of our neighbors in Europe about how they do drug approvals. But if you use AI and you have a consistent recognized matter that actually does a really good job of vetting the individual drugs, the development of them is going to rapidly move forward. And then you find the successes. You take out the ones more quickly that could have harmful side effects. But think about what happened just in terms of any one of those drugs that's being treated. If you can more rapidly develop them and the offspring from them, each time we develop a drug, there's always the opportunity to improve upon it. The decision-making that goes into that is critical. If the Food and Drug Administration can incorporate as a part of their processes using artificial intelligence to promulgate the prognosis more quickly about how they're going to be impacting the general population, we can move those drugs through on a more rapid basis. That means also that you can reduce the cost of introducing those drugs as well. Now, I got to warn everybody, though, one more thing about this. One of the most critical issues, the Achilles heel to this whole thing, is number one, not only getting appropriate databases that are both proprietary and open databases, but you have to have enough energy to actually power the databases. We're going to hit a critical point in the next few years where the amount of energy necessary to empower the huge databases that we're going to need is going to start to compete with the amount of power it takes to do the rest of the things that we expect in the country, in the world today. That has got to be recognized as a concern. We need energy. And for the country or the countries that are actually able to produce the amount of energy necessary, they're the ones that are really going to have a leg up on developing these databases and maintaining those databases long term. That's a huge part of what we're not talking about enough when it comes to artificial intelligence.
Two very important points you made, Senator, getting drugs in faster, but also I think what you said is the cost of producing these drugs. It takes about $1 billion today, Senator, to produce a blockbuster drug. Now, if the cost came down, companies would be producing them much more. And then you talked about the use of energy, where we need to look at alternative sources also, Senator.
It's more than that. It's an all of the above. We can't simply say we're going to have alternative sources and then go to items that are not continuously available. You can do everything that you want to make it a more carbon-less environment, but we're still going to, number one, need to determine ways in which we actually take carbon out of the atmosphere long-term. But the second piece on this is nuclear definitely has to be a part of this until such time as a true space-based solar collection system is available to us, which would be the purest form of energy that we could probably ever get. So I'm convinced it's going to happen, maybe not in our lifetimes, but pretty close to our lifetimes. But in the meantime, we have to develop appropriate nuclear energy as well, or we're not going to keep up with the demands that artificial intelligence is going to want, but with the energy that's going to be expected by populations throughout the world as well.
Yeah, so nuclear, I think, Senator, what you're saying is going to be an important source for us. Senator, you emphasized the importance of workforce considerations in AI policy. What specific measures are you proposing to address potential? Could be a lot of people have talked about job displacement and the need for upskilling.
There's never been a major development of advancement with regard to whether you're talking computer systems or whether you're talking just moving into machinery versus hand labor. You've always had a displacement or a change in the types of workers that you need, but you still need workers. Now, training those workers and providing them with an opportunity to be very, very valuable, that's something that we should never dismiss. It's something that we have to recognize. Our education systems are going to have to recognize that these needs are there, but at the same time, recognizing you still need the artisans, you still need the folks that understand how plumbing systems work, how electrical systems work. You need the hands-on folks that can actually get the job done in many cases. But the manufacturing processes are going to change. You're not going to need as many people building widgets necessarily or putting widgets into systems, but you still need the folks that are going to take care of the machinery that does the widget making or the widget distributions. And so the jobs are going to be there. The opportunities are going to be there. But individuals, I believe, become even more valuable in the workforce if we provide them with the appropriate training. And that appropriate training means taking an individual that may have a basic education, but allowing them in an appropriate setting to advance their own capabilities to be valuable, not just in their own right, but to an employer as well. And I think you're going to find more individuals that may not need an employer anymore. They may actually be the employer themselves as they offer their own services in a world in which everybody is connected. So yeah, do I see some displacements out there? Absolutely. But those displacements have always occurred. They may occur more quickly with the development of AI, but the opportunities for people to get ahead in this world are also there. So yeah, we'll see some displacement, but we're going to see real opportunities for advancements as well.
So some displacements, but probably even larger and bigger opportunities where companies can really play a role. Probably community colleges, Senator, can play a role rather than just four-year college degrees, I think is what the message is.
No question about it. And look, we're not having enough kids today the way it is just to maintain our own populations. Our TFR right now in the United States is close to about 1.64. You need 2.1 just to break even. China's in terrible shape. They're below 1.2 right now. Europe is probably, you know, I think in some cases, closer to the developed work, Europe is closer to the 1.26 region. Those areas, they're not making enough babies to actually replace the workers that are there today. So yeah, we're going to need people, and we're going to be inviting in people to come into the workforces in the developed countries. The opportunities are there. AI is going to enhance those opportunities, and they're going to make people more valuable. So from my perspective, yeah, it could go south on us if we don't manage this correctly. But I think if we recognize the need for education and to advance that education in such a fashion that AI is a part of it, I think we're going to be okay.
Awesome. Senator, you talked about the Europeans. The Europeans have passed the EU AI Act. Has your working group collaborated with some of our international partners, given the global nature of AI?
We are. We're talking with each other. We're learning from each other. We hope to learn from what Europe did, both the things that they did right and some of the things that they might have overregulated, which might very well send some of their top-end AI companies to the United States in order to avoid some of that regulation. We're learning from them. Now, they're going to be learning from us as well, but we're talking with one another. We're going to try to learn. You know, Britain has a safety institute. I've heard some really good things about what they've been able to do with regard to how they've identified how to keep AI safe and how to limit some of the more destructive nature of AI. We want to learn from what they've done because we need to do the same thing here in the United States. The folks that have expertise in AI here in terms of how you regulate the most high end and how you restrict some of it from getting into the bad guys' hands, we can learn from what Europe did in terms of what those are, in terms of the values of some of those systems and how you identify what is a what some people will call a frontier end of the AI development. We've got more to learn on that, but what we don't want to do is to overregulate and chase people away from the United States. We want to be seen as a location where you can continue to develop the AI capabilities, profit from them, but make sure that the quality of life is improved because of it as well.
So learning from what they've done right and maybe what they've not done right. Senator, you had, along with Senator Schumer, some of these AI insight forums that have been fairly groundbreaking. What were some of the most surprising or impactful insights you gained from these sessions? This is for our audience who were not privy to some of those sessions.
We did 9 different insight sessions where we invited folks from a spectrum of different companies, big and small, folks that represented labor, folks that represented healthcare, folks that represented the technology side of things. And we'd bring them together and we did it behind closed doors, but we invited all of the Senate staff and the Senate members to come in and listen to what they had to say. I think the one items that I personally saw in this was, number one, how much each of the different businesses had in common, whether they were big or small. Number two, the concerns of that labor had were of make sure that there's educational opportunities and make sure that AI doesn't displace folks without a place to go. That's what I got from some of it. But I also learned time and time again that there is going to be a need for regulation and a need for some reporting form. That's going to be on some of the most advanced AI capabilities. And that AI, what is the most advanced now, 6 months from now, is not going to be the most advanced. And that also we need energy, and that energy is going to be a huge part of where these databases are at. That the databases themselves, if it's garbage in, it's going to be garbage out. So you've got to have really good databases, and that there's a need to do both the proprietary databases and you have to have open source databases as well. And the ones that will probably advance the most quickly are going to be the open source databases, but you still have to have the proprietary databases because of the types of information contained in them. Those are some of the things that we learned. Universities, we will certainly want to have access to it. And across the board, all 50 states here, we want to make sure that everybody has access to these tools and that students can learn from them, that the folks who are doing research have access to them, and that our national labs be included in the development of the AI strategies in the future. And then finally, once again, I'm going to come back to this, the quality of life that we can show the American people, specifically beginning with healthcare, is huge. And that if we do it correctly, we can not only save money at the federal level for treating long-term chronic diseases, but the quality of life and the improvement of quality of life is going to be huge. Challenge that we also have to recognize is that we will have folks that have long-term indebtedness because of the institutions that are going to be changed with the treatment of healthcare, and that systems that are going to rapidly change are still going to have to be paid for. So you're going to have this incurred debt, this stranded cost that's going to be out there that is going to have to be dealt with. But we can't let that stop the development of these new tools that over a period of less than a decade will really change the face of what healthcare is going to look like in the United States. And the quality of life is going to be improved.
So some amazing insights, Senator, that you have given our audiences. Energy is important. We want innovation. We want regulation of some of these potentially high-end systems. But quality of life, I think we hear that from you, that quality of life, especially in healthcare, is going to play a huge role. I think that is very important because for some people who are not behind those closed doors. One of the questions that came for you, Senator, was that AI is moving very, very rapidly. Every day there is something new. You know, you have all kinds of things, agents, you have multimodals, et cetera. Legislation, regulation doesn't move at that same speed. So how do you balance innovation and regulation together? Because you might put some regulation today and AI is going to look very different 2 years from now.
That's correct. And I mean, I'm really glad you bring it up in that respect. I think the industry has to, at some point, participate in almost a self-regulation in some areas. We can lay out the broad guidelines and make it very clear that there are going to be certain boundaries that are not going to be allowed to be stepped over with regard to the most capable AI systems without federal regulatory approval. Those are, I'm going to call them, for lack of a better term, the frontier systems, the most expensive systems. And we know who can produce those today. And those organizations are working with us today, the largest, with regard to whether or not they can actually license to export those products, those capabilities. But down the line, and this is the part that I think is important, on an ongoing basis, you have to have an industry series of standards and a safety standard similar to what Britain has done, put together by industry using industry experts who come in and participate in that regulatory oversight. That's going to be critical. So you can have like a testing institute, like, you know, like what we call, you know, for other metrics and so forth. We have that right now at the federal level. We can incorporate an AI portion at that federal level with regard to the testing, just like we do for pipes or just like we do for fittings or any type of mechanical processes that are out there today. We can do the same thing with regard to identifying for AI purposes or for machine learning, a similar type of limit as far as communications protocols and so forth. That can be done right now. The large and small companies, I think, are all going to participate in that type of a deal. But that exists right now in the Department of Commerce. We'll want to make sure that it incorporates an AI working group as well into that kind of oversight that the industry will participate in.
Senator, thank you so much for this insightful discussions on the complexities of AI regulation. The challenges are significant, but as you have pointed out, Senator, the opportunities for the quality of life and healthcare is incredible. We really appreciate your time and your dedication to this critical issue. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on Regulating AI. Stay tuned for more conversations with global leaders shaping the future of AI policy. Thank you so much, Senator. This has been fabulous.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Regulating AI Innovate Responsibly podcast. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on the show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you'll never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review.